Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Ron DeSantis jabs at COVID vaccine manufacturers. Trump slips in polling against DeSantis amid a disastrous campaign rollout. And lawmakers take another crack at trying to solve Florida's property insurance crisis. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson. And those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, it's our last pick a number segment of the year. This is going to be our last podcast of the year, everyone. It's been a very eventful year in Florida politics. Plenty to talk about. Lots of numbers floating around. John, what do you have for us for this final podcast of the year?
Zach, I have the kind of number that Santa would be straining under if he was carrying it in his bag when he lands on the roof of your house on Christmas Eve. It's $5.4 billion.
All right, John's going big wrap up 2022. How about you, Antonio?
Well, you know what? I'm inspired by this Christmas cold weather the Sunshine State is about to get. So I'm going with a minus one.
Wow. Man, it's like those are like Minnesota temperatures. I don't think we're going to get that cold, hopefully. But it sounds like it could be pretty frosty this Christmas. My number, folks, is 900,000. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, DeSantis rose to fame with controversial policy moves that grabbed attention, especially in the realm of COVID. And he showed recently that he's sticking with that formula in his second term. The governor announced this month that he wants to convene a statewide grand jury to investigate vaccine manufacturers. That announcement came during a roundtable where contrarian doctors and scientists questioned the efficacy of the vaccine for certain populations. John, a lot of people are looking at this through a political lens as DeSantis trying to get to the right of Trump on vaccines. You know, Trump pushed to develop the vaccine in record time through Operation Warp Speed, but conservatives have really become quite skeptical of the shots, and this could be viewed as an effort by DeSantis to undermine one of Trump's signature achievements.
Yeah, this does look like the governor is throwing in completely with the anti-vaccine, that voting base that Trump has had a real awkward relationship with. You know, remember, Trump once got booed on stage for talking up vaccines. Well, you know, evidently DeSantis sees asking the Supreme Court justices, a majority of whom he's appointed, to impanel a statewide grand jury to investigate what he calls, quote, crimes and wrongdoing committed against Floridians related to the COVID-19 vaccine. You know, of course, in this announcement that the governor is asking for the grand jury, he doesn't mention that more than 1 million Americans have died of COVID-19, a lot of them unvaccinated. And, you know, that includes more than 80,000 Floridians. Instead, it appears DeSantis sees an opening to kind of discredit, you know, Trump's signature push to develop a vaccine. You know, the idea is that you come up with a negative report from this Florida grand jury that contains enough questions about the vaccine that, I guess, you know, will it blow back on Trump, who is still, you know, though DeSantis has been doing better in polling, occasionally winning a couple over Trump, it seems like the majority right now is still Trump is usually the favorite of many Republican poll respondents when it comes to who do they want to run in 2024. DeSantis, John, is more typically second.
Yeah, and it seems like on this COVID issue, DeSantis really thinks he has the upper hand. If you remember, he, in an interview, you know, he was asked, you know, kind of, I forget what the question was, but he said that he regretted going along with, I think it was like, do you regret anything about your time in office? And he said he regretted going along with the lockdowns that Trump imposed early on, or that Trump called for early on in the pandemic. And another sort of subtle jab at Trump and trying to get to the right of him. It seems like if he challenges Trump in the presidential primary, that this COVID issue, which he obviously campaigned for re-election on, is going to be a big theme of his.
Yeah, and you're right, because indeed, you know, DeSantis does have that history of having locked down the state, not for long, but for, you know, a month to 6 weeks or so, which is something that some, you know, ardent anti-vax conspiracy folks have pointed to DeSantis as also being part of the problem. So, you know, instead here, maybe he's thinking that casting a cloud over the development of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines and how they were, you know, distributed and implemented across the nation, that can somehow strengthen his popularity with those people who are wary of vaccines. And, you know, those folks, maybe a lot of them are still, you know, loving Donald Trump. And this is a chance to peel some of them off to his side, thanks to DeSantis. You know, to me, it seems like a small sample size, the number of people that, you know, really are these vaccine conspiracy believers. But, you know, maybe I'm missing something in MAGA world. DeSantis obviously sees some political advantage. You know, wouldn't you also like to think that any grand jury investigation would at least touch on DeSantis's own role in promoting the vaccines, which now he seems to think pose such health risks?
Lot of people are sharing these clips of him really talking up the vaccine. I mean, he actually, for the 1 millionth senior who was vaccinated in Florida, he did it live on Fox News, where he appeared with this guy who was a World War II veteran who was 100 years old while he got his shot. I mean, there's, you know, probably dozens and dozens of instances of DeSantis on tape promoting the vaccine early on, which is one reason a lot of people view this as pretty political.
And DeSantis also was an active player in distributing COVID-19 related state contracts to favored companies, you know, many of whose CEOs have now reemerged as big DeSantis donors. The news site, the Florida Bulldog, has explored a lot of these interconnections and dollars flowing to the governor's political committee that, you know, maybe that should be part of the grand jury investigation as well. But, you know, it seems kind of easy to predict where this investigation may go. You know, they'll find anecdotal cases of people who have had some kind of health problem that coincides with the period that they received a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. And, you know, a pileup of these examples will be published by the grand jury without a lot of exploring of whether the health problems are clearly related, scientifically related. You know, DeSantis, though, like so many things, he's going to be able to cast himself even further as a vaccine skeptic as he heads into a crowded Republican presidential primary next year, where, as you pointed out at the top of this, you know, he's trying to get to the right of Trump. He's trying to outflank that that side of the Republican Party that still supports Trump and other arch conservatives. You know, does all this help him with Floridians, you know, with American voters that are not part of Trump's MAGA base? That's an unknown, but I guess it's a primary move. And it's also a political shtick that will get him some attention. You know, many out of all this, though, you wonder, an alarming thought is, could this translate into a DeSantis policy move that is designed to further limit Floridians' access to vaccinations, which a vast majority in the medical community as well certainly believes are still needed as we head into 2023, which is going to be our fourth year facing COVID-19 and all its variants.
Yeah, to be fair, you know, the vaccine has, I mean, there have been some, obviously, some side effects. There's been, you know, some instances that have been documented of increased myocarditis, which was a heart issue for that is especially more prevalent in younger men who take the vaccine. But the, you know, the CDC and public health officials have looked into all this and still say that the benefits of the vaccine outweigh the risks, and they recommend vaccination for children 6 months and up, and all the way up to obviously adults and seniors. So you know, the public health officials have really been pushing these, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, DeSantis has sort of made made public health a focus here, pushing back against the CDC and Fauci. So I'm not sure how much the CDC recommending these shots makes a difference with certain people who are skeptical of them. But should be pointed out that, you know, the leading public health officials in the nation are very heavily promoting these and do say that the benefits do outweigh the risks. Well, DeSantis's strategy has worked for him so far, and he's looking like an increasingly strong presidential candidate, especially with Trump faltering in recent weeks. Trump's 2024 campaign rollout has been a calamity. He's been taking heat for dining with a notorious white nationalist, calling for, quote, termination of the Constitution over his unfounded election fraud claims, and promoting a, quote, major announcement that turned out to be an NFT money-making venture. Meanwhile, his legal troubles keep growing, with the January 6th committee just this week sending criminal prosecution referrals to the Justice Department. As Trump has struggled, DeSantis has surged past him in the polls, with two recent national surveys by the Wall Street Journal and USA Today Suffolk University showing DeSantis leading in a potential presidential primary matchup against Trump. Antonio, Trump's third campaign for president is off to a pretty bad start, to the point that it seems like DeSantis is looking increasingly like he has a pretty good chance of knocking him off.
Yes, Zach, and I hope you and you like those NFTs, because actually that's what I got you, John, and our producer Chandler for Christmas this year. But
you know me so well. Thank you.
but spoiler alert, I got Chandler the superhero NFT, because it takes superpowers to get this podcast off the ground. So, but look, seriously, you know, let's think back to a year ago at this time. Yeah, we were already speculating about a potential DeSantis challenge, but Trump still had a vice grip on the GOP. But boy, how a year can really change things, you know. And it's important to look back over the year, because, yeah, his 2024 campaign launch is off to a pretty bad start, like you noticed, like I said. But, you know, and we're not even out of 2022 yet. But, you know, that infamous dinner with Ye and Nick Fuentes and his unforced error in that Constitution statement. But his problems actually go way back this year. You know, I would make the argument that it really all began to a large extent with those televised House Committee January 6 hearings that began in June, and which I think were a catalyst to a lot of his slide. You know, the hearings have put that violent and terrible attack on the U.S. Capitol in a completely different context for the majority of Americans. Now, up until the hearings, I think most people viewed the January 6 attack as a protest that had just gone wrong. Yeah, they believed that Trump shouldn't have said what he said in that belligerent speech outside the White House that day. But I think still they believe that for the most part, that the responsibility for the violence lay with those who stormed the Capitol. The hearings, however, have stated the case that this was not a rogue event, that it was planned with Trump at the forefront of those plans, and it was part of a larger coup attempt to thwart the constitutional process, and all based on this fabricated claim of election fraud. And now a vast majority of Americans see it that way. Yeah, the Trump base doesn't. They're still solidly behind Trump and won't hear of anything else. And in fact, I got some emails this morning to that effect. But the wide majority of Americans do. And that's one of the reasons why Trump's slate of election denying candidates in the November elections failed to win, you know, and failed to win, costing the GOP's, you know, forecast takeover of the House by a wide margin and control of the U.S. Senate, you know, as the forecast red wave ebbed to a ripple. And that's because, again, the broader population of voters rejected these Trump election denying candidates in the November election. Look, that reality here at the end of 2022 has now emboldened Republicans to challenge Trump with DeSantis in the catbird seat. The governor is going to be inaugurated in early January, and that will be covered wall to wall by conservative media. Then the spotlight will be on him through the legislative session into May, and then he'll probably end up going on Fox News, you know, sign more bills, you know, live on the air during their programs. All the while, what will Trump do? You know, maybe fending off some kind of legal action, maybe more rallies, maybe more truthing on his social media platform. Look, the bottom line is Trump will be talking and DeSantis will be doing. And by this time next year, GOP primary voters may well be much more behind someone who has been doing rather than someone who's been talking.
Antonio, do you think that DeSantis is in danger of peaking too soon here? I mean, everything seems to be going his way. He wins re-election by nearly 20 percentage points. Trump rolls out his campaign and nosedives and falls flat on his face. He continues to, you know, climb in the polls against Trump to the point where he's actually leading Trump in some of these polls. It just seems like everything is turning up roses for him politically. And I just wonder if, you know, it's all a bit of a mirage potentially. I mean, do you think that he is hitting his stride at the right time? Or, I mean, you raised the good point of he's still in office. He can push all these policy proposals and make headlines, which he did with this vaccine rollout. So he's got the opportunity to keep being in the spotlight, but it's not easy to come up with something that really generates this much attention. I guess DeSantis has proven, though, that he's got a pretty good knack for it.
Yeah, look, you're right. I mean, it's always a danger that you peak too early in these types of situations. But I think, you know, that's why perhaps we haven't seen DeSantis, among other reasons, you know, really talk much about 2024 and why I would suspect in the first 6 months of next year, he's going to be focused and have the attention focused on him as governor. And there are obviously pitfalls there. I mean, if he talks up an issue too much and doesn't get something done on it, that could have consequences. However, you know, he does have a very pliant legislature. He's got super majorities in both houses. You know, anything he wants to get done, he can pretty much get done. And as I've said before, if you are an aspiring presidential candidate at this point of the election cycle headed into 2024, your two big challenges are name recognition and money. And DeSantis pretty much has both. So he is kind of still in the catbird seat. You know, so I would expect, and I think most people that I've talked to expect, that he'll just continue to govern and be governor through the middle of next year, and then we'll see. And if he does govern effectively to the standpoint of how the right and how Republican primary voters see him, if he does that successfully, then I think he avoids that peaking too early pitfall.
Yeah, I talked to some Republican strategists about that this week, and they really said that the best way to win your next job is to do your current job well. And for Republican voters, DeSantis has done that, with his first term, and he seems to have a formula that's working for him. So they say, just keep with what you're doing, and really, you don't really need to deviate too much. You know, the big wild cards are if Trump starts attacking him aggressively, it could get a lot harder for him to ignore Trump, and he might get sucked into, a debate with him, which would distract from some of the stuff that he's trying to do as governor. And then also, you know, as he tries to stay in the spotlight, does he go too far? Does he kind of go off the cliff a little bit with some of the stuff that he's doing? And every time people have thought that he's done that in the past, he's turned out to, it hasn't hurt him as people thought it might. So far that doesn't look like a huge danger for him. He seems to have a good sense of where the line is there. So, but these next few months for him are going to be pretty big. Well, the second property insurance special session of the year wrapped up recently, and lawmakers did what they've pretty much always done by passing bills to help insurance companies that provide no immediate relief to ratepayers. The main thrust of the legislation was to make it harder to sue insurance companies. John, the Florida legislature has been beating on this same drum for years, and the insurance market keeps getting worse to the point where people are getting so that they can't afford their homes. Is there any reason to think that this latest legislation will stabilize the market?
Well, it should help the market because it gives the industry everything it wants at the expense of Florida homeowners. Insurers really should flourish in the state because they can make some serious money from policyholders right now. Even though we are a state that has a pretty high risk, as we've seen from a couple of major hurricanes this year. But the other question, too, is how quickly the market shows any signs of improvement and whether rates become more competitive. Well, that's anybody's guess as to when that we're going to see that. Legislative leaders are saying that maybe a year to a year and a half before improvements emerge. Well, that's a long wait, especially when people are going to be paying more for coverage. You know, it's no surprise that this special session was held after the November elections, because had Governor DeSantis and the Republican-controlled legislature did what they did before voters went to the ballot, well, at least the margin of these Republican victories this year would have been smaller, I think. You would have seen, you know, a little bit of a voter backlash to these kind of changes that have been made, I think. You know, basically, DeSantis and the legislature gave the industry exactly what it has been calling for years. You know, among the changes, they'll get a bigger market pool of more easy-to-cover clients by shrinking the state-backed Citizens Property Insurance Corporation from its current 1.1 million policyholders, because it's going to be making people renew insurance only if they can't accept coverage that's 20% or less expensive than their Citizens policies. So a lot of people are going to be winding up paying 20% more now when they go to renew, because they have to get out of Citizens and they have a private offer that's 20% more costly than Citizens. The legislature also has shielded insurance companies from many dragged out lawsuits by policyholders unhappy with their settlement offers when they make a claim. The legislature eliminated what's called one-way attorney's fees, where if you sue your insurer and you win, the company has to pay your legal fees. Well, from here on in, if you sue and win, your legal costs will come out of the award that you settle on. So that cuts the money from the homeowner and may discourage them from going to court. And then, of course, state taxpayers are also going to be putting up another $1 billion in reinsurance, basically insurance for the insurance companies. That's on top of $2 billion in taxpayer-funded reinsurance that was approved in May during that first special session. So there's $3 billion of taxpayer money that's also going to be made available to the industry for its use to help cover claims and to help, you know, with their own financial investments. The legislature, finally, one of the key differences, too, they eliminated this thing called assignment of benefits. That's a practice that a lot of homeowners have used to sign over their claims to private contractors so they don't have to deal directly with the insurance company. The homeowner may get his work done more quickly and leave it to the contractor then to deal with the insurance company. But the industry says that these AOB contractors tend to sue a lot, again, driving up the cost of litigation that they say is their whole problem. So the legislature banned that now in Florida as well. You know, basically, DeSantis and the legislature are totally trusting the insurance industry that if they give insurers all the protections that they want, that insurers will come back to the state and start writing policies. We've had 12 companies stop insuring in Florida, and 7 have gone out of business altogether just in the last, like, roughly year and a half. So the market is a mess. But in this case, the legislature has tilted the table heavily in the favor of the insurance industry, basically in a desperate bid to lure companies back to Florida and try to spur competition and, as a result, maybe lower premiums. Maybe. It's a giant bet, and legislators are using homeowners' money for that bet. But you know, bottom line is Floridians are going to be paying more for insurance, at least in the short term. And Citizens customers, I should say, not only will have to go to the private market if they get that offer that's 20% or less better. So if you're paying, that translates into, think about it, you know, if you're paying $4,000 a year now for Citizens, you get a private policy for $4,800, $800 more, you've got to take it. Plus, customers in flood zones also will have to buy flood insurance, and all Citizens customers, flood zone or not, are going to have flood insurance within 5 years. So that's another expense coming your way. Clearly, this is not something that's going to be wildly popular. So maybe it's no surprise that DeSantis promised this special session when he was out this fall talking about the impact of Hurricane Ian. But he shrewdly waited until after the November election to call it. because legislators really stuck it to homeowners. But supporters say the state needed something to stabilize the market. So they've given the companies a lot. Now we'll see what the insurance companies do with it, basically. It's your money, and we'll see what happens to it.
Yeah, we might need a Christmas miracle to fix the insurance market in this state. Hopefully, you've been pretty busy keeping an eye on this stuff in 2022. My Christmas wish for you is that you don't have to write as much about property insurance in 2023.
Thank you. It's that's been a lot. Wonderful. Yeah, that's a wonderful gift.
We'll see. We'll see if it comes true. Well, we'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Sure, gentlemen. I had minus one, as in negative one. And gentlemen, let's talk about U.S. Senator Rick Scott. While still new Florida man Donald Trump has not had a good year, longtime Florida man Rick Scott had a just as bad 2022. Specifically, Scott was in charge of the charge to take over the U.S. Senate. But after the votes were counted, not only did Republicans not have a majority in the chamber, they actually had a net loss of one seat. Minus one. That's despite President Joe Biden's way low popularity ratings and a 40-year high in inflation and a rise in interest rates and fears about a recession. Then along the way, Scott has had more than a few political boondoggles this year as well. In one instance, for example, he came out to call for this ill-advised proposal to end all federal programs, including Social Security and Medicare, if they are not reauthorized every 5 years. Look, it was such a bad idea that even fellow Florida U.S. Senator Marco Rubio wouldn't endorse it. In fact, in a debate with Val Demings, Rubio said, go ask Rick Scott about the proposal because he didn't want to even talk about it. Then Scott backed Trump's poor picks for U.S. Senate candidates and openly sparred with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell by defending the lacking quality of those candidates. Then after the election, when the GOP Senate majority effort had failed, Scott challenged McConnell for Republican leader and reportedly lost by a lopsided 37-10 vote. Then after the last of the truly poor candidates lost, that being Georgia's Herschel Walker, who arguably was the worst of the bunch, Scott said the GOP Senate failure was partly because the GOP did not promote mail-in voting. Whoa, wait, what? Senator, it was your party that's been dumping on mail-in voting for 2 years. Then Scott said another reason that the GOP didn't do well was because it didn't secure enough small donor fundraising donations. That's, whoa, wait, what? Part two. Senator, you were the guy in charge of Senate fundraising. You know, it's never good to get called out for doing a poor job, but it's even worse when you're the one that unwittingly has called yourself out. The one thing we can say about Rick Scott is he has ambition. But 4 years into his term, and Scott will be on the ballot in 2024, by the way, the achievements of U.S. Senator Rick Scott lag way behind his aspirations.
Yeah, one guy who probably can't wait for the new year to come is Rick Scott. He had a pretty bad 2022. It wasn't, the failures of the U.S. Senate candidates was the biggest thing. But then he also rolled out his plan where he was calling for, a lot of people perceived it as calling for raising taxes on lower income people. And there was talk about sunsetting every federal law, which meant you would have to reauthorize Medicare and Social Security. And he had to walk a lot of that back. So just not a great year for Florida's junior U.S. senator overall. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, my $5.4 billion, well, that's dollars, and that's the amount of taxes that the state has collected this year from what's called documentary stamps. These are the taxes that are paid during home sales, and it's a new record for Florida. That's also further proof that the state's housing market was off the chain for a lot of this year. Now things have cooled down some with rising interest rates over the last couple of months, but state economists just this month have reported that this Christmas bounty of cash, which poured into the state budget from these real estate transactions, it's certainly going to make next year's spending a little easier, although this same long-range financial outlook shows that the state is brimming with money, largely helped by COVID-era federal aid to the state and tourism and the state economy generally coming roaring back after 2 years of this COVID cool down. But just to give some perspective on this $5.4 billion in dock stamp taxes, that is a full $1.4 billion more than it was a year earlier, which was another record-setting year. Indeed, last year's $4 billion in dock stamp collections narrowly beat the level that was hit in 2006, back when rebuilding after two straight years with a combined eight major hurricanes during that period, that had set the state in constant construction mode. But that too, of course, was just before the housing collapse of 2008, when everything stopped and dock stamp revenue really took a nosedive in the state. It's really been down until now. It's been creeping back up, but we're finally starting to see and surpass those old levels that we saw back in the mid-2000s. But we'll just see. The building boom has had an effect on everything in this state. Rent affordability, salaries and wages, supply chain, population, with people moving here for jobs and just overall spending, in everything. Some of it is good. Some of it is has not so good economic and societal effects, with the many low wage earners, the have-nots of this state, struggling even more in this age of affordability and trying to find rent that is impossible to meet. But 2022, that's where we're about to say so long to. That has clearly been a boom year for housing, and even though we may be ending it with people grumbling about interest rates and maybe wishing that they'd cashed in on their house and sold it a little sooner and contributed to this mountain of dock stamp taxes that we're talking about here.
Yeah, and that money, a lot of it goes to pay for affordable housing. It'll be interesting to see how much the legislature delves into affordable housing issues in this next legislative session, because I really think that is on everybody's minds in the state. The rising cost of rent is huge for a lot of people, with salaries not going up nearly as much. So definitely something to keep an eye on next year. My number is 900,000. That's how much Ron DeSantis has raised through his political committee in the 6 weeks since his election. The fact that the money is continuing to pour into that committee is just one sign among many that he's gearing up for a presidential run. DeSantis raised an unprecedented $200 million for his reelection campaign, which is more than any governor in U.S. history, and much of it went unspent. He ended the election with more than $60 million left in the committee, money that is expected to be rolled into an independent federal super PAC that could support his presidential campaign. That $60 million and the money that keeps flowing into the committee will help DeSantis keep his political team together as he mulls a presidential bid. And also, it could help him quickly build up campaigns in early states like Iowa and New Hampshire if he pulls the trigger on a presidential run. So while DeSantis is staying mum about his plans for a potential presidential bid, the old adage, watch what I do and not what I say, applies here. And what DeSantis is doing is raising big bucks, despite no more campaigns for governor in the future. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Chandler Hopeful, and thanks to all of you for listening to our last podcast of the year. Hope everyone has a great holiday. We'll see you in the new year.